Well, let's start by asking you to give us your name.
My name is Joe Vecta.
And ask you to describe how you came to work in some kind of rough association with the green industry, since that's the ultimate focus. But what kind of work did you do over the, sort of just a first scan of things?
Prior to the bakery business?
Or how you came to work in the bakery in association with the bakery business actually begins to answer it.
I originally started on the railroad as a brakeman and was stationed in Horn Pain for 5 years. And then we just got married and so I was laid off at that point. So I decided that I wasn't going to take a bump or move down east or stuff like that. I don't think that was going to be the life for me. So what my wife and I did, we moved to Beardmore into the mining industry. My brother-in-law worked in the gold mine there, so I got a job there. And then I only worked there for 9 months, and we were expecting our first child. And so we moved to Thunder Bay. We stayed with my mother and my parents for a little while. And meanwhile, I was looking for work while I was here and went to the unemployment insurance, as it was called, mm-hmm. at that time, and they said, "Well, we have an opening. Can you sell bread?" I said, "I've never sold anything in my life, actually, but well, go ahead." He said, "Give me a form," and he says, "You go down there to McGavin Toastmaster on Main Street there, and they're looking for salespeople. They're opening up a new division." So I says, "Okay, I'll do that." So that's how it started.
So you started with McGavin Toastmaster, which was a national company, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was from, actually they were in the West. Mm-hmm. They were from Manitoba right to the BC.
Right.
They had about five bakery plants across the...
Shut it up for a moment.
They've had about five bakery plants across Canada, across the western part of Canada. And Alan McGavin owned all that, so I started out with them.
Right. And the operations here in Thunder Bay, or at the Lakehead, as it was, one of the two cities, at the time, did not involve baking, I suppose it was.
It was Fort William at that time, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
And did they have a bakery, did they establish a bakery?
Yes,
here?
They had a bakery at 402 North Main Street, and it was for, I think there was a few other bakeries that the names changed, but it was still the same company. It was McGavin's. It was I'm trying to think of the other two names, but which is probably not that important. But it was still owned by the same company,
right.
Big international company.
Sure. And when was this exactly then?
1961 until 68, when Shaw Bakery bought the assets. I guess they had made a proposal to Shaw's to get them out of the market, and
to move Shaw, out themselves, turn it over to
they
Shaw.
They wanted Shaw to move out.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because Shaw was the dominant baker here at that particular time. They had their motto at that time, I think, was a wagon on every street in Thunder Bay or Fort William and Port Arthur. And they wanted the whole thing. And instead, the Shaw family made a counterproposal to see what it would take to take them to leave town. So that's what happened, and when it happened, they took everybody over. They took all the office staff, all the salespeople, all the bakers, all over to the 240 South Algoma Street, and we worked in competition with each other, same way as we did when we were apart as bakers. And then after a while, everything kind of merged together, and as through attrition, people left or didn't like this or didn't like that, so they probably got the workforce down to size. So,
mm-hmm.
So I was a salesman with them for a couple of years, I believe, 2-3 years.
Right. And so you worked, this was 61, and you said the Shaw Bakery took over.
In 1968.
68,
yes.
seven
yeah.
years later.
Yeah.
And then you sold bread until...
Until that point.
Until
and
the
then,
early 90s?
Oh, yes. I sold... No, I wasn't a salesman all the time. I was a salesman with Shaw for about 3-4 years, and I was approached to go management, like supervision,
right.
or working supervisor. And I accepted at that point. sales manager that approached me was Theo Gutelaar. He's no longer with us, but so I accepted that job and was in management ever since. And
right.
Traveled all of northwestern Ontario.
And the, I don't know whether we should note the latter end, Shaw closed down operations. When was that?
I'm not quite sure of the date, I retired in 2001 and they were still in operation.
Okay, so that was 40 years then that you were with McGavin's.
Yes, and Shaw.
And Shaw, yeah. A nice long yeah. period of time.
Oh, yeah.
And about 30 of that then, I guess, was in management, was it? From
pretty
about
well.
71?
Pretty
through,
well, yes.
Through 01.
Was in management, yeah. And
right.
It was an opportunity which I didn't regret. I enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah. So we have a little bit of selling to talk about, and then it's the management function, I guess. What's involved in selling bread? How much pushing was required?
Bakery? Well, you had, years ago when I first started out, we used to go door-to-door, things like that, and you'd have 150 to 200 accounts in a week to call on with a basket of bread. And door-to-door, and every time you lost a customer, you had to knock on five doors to get one back to keep your sales up all the time. That was pretty well, that was the retail end of it, or the house-to-house part of it. And the wholesale part of it, you had to also make calls and offer your services and to try to service these different accounts. The more accounts you had, the bigger your route got. And,
yes,
because most of us, we were all commissioned salesmen mm-hmm. at that point. So,
what was the split, if you will, in terms of sales? To what extent was bread sold at the door, or to what extent did stores of various sizes sell bread?
Well, years ago, retail to the home was very big, and then it just with both people working in the home and. All that eventually just sort of faded away to the point where it wasn't profitable to deliver door to door, things like that, and the wholesale part of it got a lot stronger. We used to travel, even in the country here, like service the farming community.
Mm-hmm.
You'd do 3 days of wholesale and 2 days of farming community. One route would do that. And
right.
Go one direction, one Monday in another direction the next Thursday or something of that nature
sure.
for timing, yeah.
So this actually forces us to talk about the retail end of things. Mm-hmm. When did the supermarkets appear in the local market? Safeway and Loblaws came
in? Yeah, prior. Well,
Loblaws came in as part of Keskis, I guess, didn't they?
Loblaws was in Keskis, yes, and there was an A&P on Court Street. I remember it was the first one that opened up. That was the first A&P store in Thunder Bay. It was in Court Street, and prior to that, they were all independents.
Yes,
like you know, they were like
Wilmot and Siddle, for example.
Wilmot and Siddle, Bouzette's, you know, in the East End, and there was several others. Like you wouldn't believe the East End at one time had. Probably you know, 22 confectionery stores just over that bridge.
Yeah.
A lot of people
in the East End.
Yeah, just the East End alone.
Cool.
Yeah, like if you ever took some history out of the East End part of it, every corner there was a corner store of some sort where people
mm-hmm.
Derived a living from it.
Some number of those buildings are still there, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Right.
Yeah,
serving whatever purpose.
Yeah, it was like Ferrari's and
right.
Sets and Kutniks and.
Sure.
The Zacks and the Zach
Sounds
boys.
As if you serviced the East End for a while.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was part of my.
What were your roots over the years here in the city? What areas of the city did you sell?
Well, I covered them all, probably pretty
really?
Well because of changing. If you'd bid for a better job, you took on a different area possibly.
Sure.
When an opening came up, you had
right.
the opportunity to bid on it, and it was. Covers all of Thunder Bay, and then after that, there were even routes out of town that you had to look after too. Like,
what's the furthest out of Thunder Bay that you yourself sold bread?
Winnipeg was the farthest. We got near the end of the Shaw era. There was we were trying to keep the volumes up in the bakery business, and because the markets were shrinking.
Yes.
For a number of reasons, people weren't eating maybe white bread as much. People weren't, what might I say, they were doing more competition. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like alone at one point there's like 7 or 8 bakers on one shelf in like Maltese's Storeford, for example. They had a great big bakery section.
Of their own baking or different?
No, different bakers. Like there was, yes, Kivala and Purity and Parnell's and Shaw's and McGavin's and Bennett's and Roma.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of bakers in this town.
So. Yes. How important was bread in the retail business? Not yours as door to door, but in the stores, the independents and in the supermarkets. Is bread an important? How important did you sense it was
to the bakery?
To the business, to the business of selling food, is bread an important item?
Oh yeah, it's a big item. Like it ranked up there with like meat and dairy and bread. They were like,
mm-hmm,
they were probably the three biggest items in the supermarket. They commanded a lot of shelf space, and yeah, and it was a necessity of life. Yeah. Eh?
And when the supermarkets appeared, I guess they got busy baking themselves. Did they all do that from the beginning?
At first they didn't. No, we used to supply like the Loblaw chain with, we had a huge bake shop upstairs where we made every cake, birthday cakes, wedding cakes, you name it, we had. We supplied them all with that, and we had a delivery every morning to the Loblaws for their counters. It looked like their counters looked as if they were baking them at that point, but we supplied most of it, you know, most of the Loblaws.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, they did their own baking.
Sure.
They started putting their own mixers, and
yes,
and that's the way they did it.
So I guess from the, when Shaw's took over from the Gavin Toastmaster in 68, mm-hmm, there were still the small local bakeries in operation.
Oh,
here,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
What share of the market do you think Shaw's had, or did you have a feel for that?
Oh, I'm sure, like in the restaurant business, Shaw probably commanded probably 80-90% of the restaurant business. Like our, mm-hmm, biggest competitors in restaurant, once McGavin was out of the territory, was probably Parnell and Purity. That was another baker that was in the East End.
Mm-hmm.
But we commanded the lion's share of that market.
So it really is a story. Part of this activity we're talking about involves better than 30 years of some part of that time of a local family than having a dominant position in baking in town.
Well, I guess it started, probably Sandy would be able to fill you in and all that.
He will indeed.
Like with his family, he started the bakery business in 1923. You know, like, mm-hmm, he would say Uncle Jack and whoever.
Yeah,
he'd tell you all that.
Yeah, we'll enjoy
hearing
that in a week's time.
Yeah.
So you were selling, you said as far as Winnipeg, so lots of points in between then.
We had a transport system in place, and like 50% of our plant business was in the outlying market. Like we did 50% of our production in the plant was the city of Fort William and Port Arthur at one point, and the other bit was the outlying market as far as Wawa,
mm-hmm,
on that end. We even ended up in Sault Ste. Marie for a while, covering some of the,
sure,
the Dominion stores that were up that way.
Eastward, you'd be in competition with bakeries, I suppose, in Sault Ste. Marie, Sudbury, or
Westons,
or Toronto, or whatever,
Westons
out of Toronto.
Westons were very
westward, big. You'd be in competition with bakeries in out of Winnipeg, I guess. But
exactly. Yeah, they had Winnipeg plants there. And,
yeah,
that was a tough market to crack. Very tough.
The whole the westward one, even short of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
In Kenora.
Well, west, we had a trailer loop that ran from here to Ignace. We had a salesperson there. We had a salesperson in Dryden and Kenora, then double back and cut across Dryden to Fort Francis, Atikokan, and that was the loop,
sure,
that the trailer made every, at first was every night, I believe, and then after that it got to be every second night, and to make the loads more profitable, to make sure that you,
yes,
had full trailers going because,
right,
of the price of fuel and that. It was a costly,
mm-hmm,
costly effort.
Sure.
Yeah, and the same thing east. We would go Long Lac, Geraldton, cut across that back road towards Manitowoc. It was a bush road. Yeah, that was a rough grind sometimes. And then you go to White River, Wawa, and come back and do Marathon and Scriber Terrace and Nipigon and then home.
What kind of vehicle did you have on this eastward loop, especially on that bush road? Was it a semi-trailer truck?
Mack truck, yeah. Semi,
a big Mack truck.
Semi-trailer, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's what they had. Both ends were trailers, 18-foot. They call 18-wheelers, but I think the trailers were 40-foot.
Right, the 40-foot trailer.
Yeah, 40-foot, so.
Yeah. Lots of different dimensions to this. I'm thinking of loading a trailer. What's involved with that, what the weight of a trailer would be, and so on.
Well, we used to hold around 33 racks of bread. 33 racks of bread, I'm thinking. And each rack containing 300 loaves of bread, or 320. So your load was anywhere from counting pieces. Some pieces were smaller, so you could get more on a trailer, depending on what the product was.
Right.
Yeah, so...
The racks on each side of you'd be able to walk down the center, I suppose.
We got into a system that was on wheels, which made it a lot easier. You'd push a rack of 300 bread in, and it was you could load a trailer very quickly. Prior to that, we used to use steel trays that used to nest on top of each other, mm-hmm. and you'd wheel a pile into the trailer, 12 high, and then you'd pick up 6 more trays and stack it on top to reach the ceiling. To get the full capacity, and I helped in that area at times for like training transport drivers where to go and you know where to drop the bread off.
Was the did the shipping involve just the driver or a helper as well, or did the driver have all the unloading
work? The driver did the unloading. Yeah, there was times I guess he had a helper and you know, maybe in training or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, because he'd make the trip himself.
Yes. Do these, just wondering idly, is this still happening? I guess trucks are still running bread out to these outlying areas, are they now?
Oh, I'm sure they are, yeah, but I think they might be using freight systems instead of running their own vehicles.
You know? Oh, yes.
Yeah, like...
all those trucks running, you never know what's inside, I guess.
That's true, yeah. We used to, at times we had to use the freight systems if our trailer broke down or something, or...
Yes.
Lease a tractor or a trailer or both or something like that. We'd use our knowns or we'd use Lakehead Freightways. We use Lakehead Freightways in a lot of towns, their depots. Mm-hmm. We'd drop it right in their depot. In other areas, we would purchase a trailer and get permission to park it in some business's yard where the man would back up to the trailer at night, unload the bread. The salesman living in that community in the morning, wake up, open the doors, and we had the bread out in the market the same time we had the bread out in Thunder Bay, you know, because the trailer go overnight.
Sure.
And when they woke up in the morning, the bread was there. So
right.
We were as fresh selling bread out there as we were in the city with this system.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there are going to be lots of aspects of the management of all of this to think about as well. Mm-hmm. Back to the retail business here in town. Home delivery would be primarily then of bread and milk as well, I suppose. That was
not on our trucks, no.
No, not on yours, but I mean in terms of others doing that. Were other grocery items brought to the house in those days?
I think there were some small, squiddies. Mr. Squiddy used to offer a service of groceries out to Nalaloo and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd probably take bread with him or whatever, canned goods and things like that.
Yeah. Craigie's Fish Market. Mm-hmm. I remember them. They're driving around on Fridays and dropping off fresh fish
out in the country.
No, in the country, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's quite a business. I hadn't actually thought of home delivery. Mm-hmm. Milk is kind of familiar enough. One hears about birds that know how to peck the top so they get the milk out of out of a glass bottle and whatnot. But bread. Deliveries are more an interesting addition to it all. Mm-hmm. The
in the country, we used probably to fill in our routes because the communities were a lot smaller and the routes were, as bread routes were smaller than they were in the city. So we would use other products to fill in our loads. Like you probably, I'm not sure if we use, I don't know if we used milk as much as, but we used like, we'd sell chips off our truck, or we'd sell confectionery products, mm-hmm. things like that, just to fill our load to maximize the efficiency of the routes.
These would be goods that you would buy. They weren't mm-hmm. goods.
Yeah,
that
we
you
had
would
to purchase them. We'd buy, and we didn't bake everything. Like we used to purchase Vachon cakes, which we sold
out of Quebec.
Yeah, and Wilman's cakes out of BC, and we would Dutch. I forget what they're called out of Winnipeg. They were a flaky pastry, and we did a lot of purchasing mm-hmm. too. But they're not as profitable as when you manufacture your own stuff.
I dare say.
No.
Because
no.
there's already some cost of transport as well as
exactly.
the baking itself
all
and
that
the packaging and so on. That's
the commission and all that stuff. And
sure.
there's usually precious little left.
Right.
But it did help to enable us to sell our products in those towns.
Sure.
And pay the salespeople.
Yes.
Yeah. Because without them, they probably couldn't earn a big enough wage to support their families.
So. You mentioned being on commission. Was there a base amount and then commission on top of that, or was it entirely commission that you?
No, there was a base amount. Some companies went entire commission, like Weston's, the bigger companies. And when you reached a certain amount of sales, the commission structure would drop because the load was a lot bigger. So they still made an excellent wage, but
yeah.
It was a base plus commission, I guess. Mm-hmm. They were like union shops, and they were negotiated. They negotiated this every 2 or 3 years.
Were you all union members?
Except for management.
Right, the salesmen and
the salesmen
bakers
and the bakers.
What was the union to which you belonged?
It was bakery and confectionery workers, and they were mainly from the West.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I'm just trying to think of, Mr. White was the chief negotiator for years and years that I ran into, and he was out of Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have a working, effective local here, or were you part of a larger local?
We were Bakery and Confectionery Workers of America, so we were part of them. But we had our own local here.
You did have it. Was the local quite active?
Oh, yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Grievance procedures, I would imagine, are the...
Yeah.
The bread and butter, if you will,
exactly.
of a union. That's what really justifies being members.
Sandy used to have fun with us on those things. Like I recall one time we were on the picket line, and Sandy would walk with us and wanted to hold the sign and see what it felt like.
He'd like to share all the experiences of life.
Yeah, he was a character.
Well, I got that sense chatting with him a few days ago, setting up the next interview.
He
was a bit of a character.
Yeah.
Did selling bread involve a typical day? Typical day on the job, where it was one day like the next one. Could you sketch a?
Oh, pretty well. You had a certain route to follow. You had a time schedule to follow. If you weren't there on time, they were looking for you pretty well, because when you sold bread products, you always gave enough to last until the next day,
mm-hmm.
with a little bit of a cushion. And if you sold out completely for whatever reason, it could be a pay week, it could be weather, or that affected the sales.
Yeah.
So if they were out of bread, they'd be phoning wondering where you are or something.
Sure.
Or if you were late through snowstorms. And some of the days I remember, snowstorms were up to here in snow and couldn't use the side streets or anything, and the main lines were plowed, and our salesman even actually put bread on a toboggan and go across the creek. You know where Arbo's store is over on the, used to be in behind Balsam Street there. Arbo's store, it's on, I can't think of the name of the street. Anyways, he was one of our independent accounts. And I remember a man by the name of Albert Vanshee was one of our salespeople, and he actually got the bread to him. On a toboggan, couldn't get near his store because sometime in the 70s or late 60s, we had some vicious snowstorms here in Thunder Bay.
Sure.
A lot of snow.
Right. What were the hours of work for you as a salesman?
Well, the salesman's day was pretty long. We'd all arrive probably at work, depending on, if it was a restaurant route, we'd be early because they want bread and buns for breakfast or earlier. So some of the guys would get out at 5 o'clock, and there was only so much room on the dock to load, so we had scheduled times to load, like 5, 5.30, 6, 6.30. And give you time to check your load and put your product onto your truck, because right. you were responsible for every loaf of bread that you put on the truck. And at night, if you had 600 loaves and you had 100 left, you were required to give money for 500 loaves. Like, you know, you had to balance.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course. And you were doing this with what, paddle trucks or something of that sort here in the city?
Yeah, they were step vans. Yeah.
Those were
the easiest. They were the easiest to operate because they're a little lower to the ground. Mm-hmm. Out in the country, we used like a box truck, like probably a 5-ton truck with a box.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Covered boxes.
Covered boxes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was, that became kind of a warehouse for you, too.
Sure.
That particular setup, yes. Yeah.
If the bread didn't sell, if you brought whatever number of loaves back, did the bakery have any use for them? They wouldn't.
Oh yes.
They wouldn't be thrown out. I don't.
No. No. Well, years ago, at first, and I think they used to take it to the John Street dump. You know, and then after a while, they found out, you know, that was quite a big waste. And when you were competing in the market, you want to be the freshest baker of all, and have a reputation. You would pick up the bread a little sooner. You know, keep it fresher than your opposition, and that would start to pile up. You'd get quite a bit of bread back if you couldn't control your orders properly, because everything you had to it was a big guess. But you did we had route books, and you acquired a history for each store, and every Monday you would find that you sold basically the same amount of bread in these stores. Like within a loaf or two.
Sure.
So once you got the history established, you could become pretty good in guessing what you were selling. And once some of the bread was coming back, they decided to have thrift stores, because there's nothing wrong with the bread. It was good bread, and people would buy it and put it in their freezers. And so that became sometimes probably the profit for the bakery for the year at times, because instead of throwing it out.
Well, it's the matter of selling those last loaves, mm-hmm. clearing everything out that brings in that makes up the profit, isn't it?
When you were in the market, you had the opportunity to roll one day.
Yes.
Yesterday's bread would go on top of today's, and if it didn't go the next day when you came, the consumer was smart too. They wanted the freshest loaf, so
yes
they would dig in behind.
Right.
Yeah, the freshest loaf.
Yeah, they would be perfectly capable of that. Inventory, were these sales patterns computerized at any point, or was it all manual through your years of involvement?
Well, we had a computer at the bakery, we got our reports, route by route, product by product.
Right. So when would that have begun to happen? This may begin to move us into your management roles at the company.
Actually, Shaw Bakery was probably one of the more advanced bakers in Thunder Bay. They used to have a cooling system which was never touched by hands, like from the time it was baked to mix to the divider, where it divided the bread into little hunks. That was the upstairs, that was the production part. I wasn't involved that much in it, but I was aware.
I've been up there once.
Yeah, and they had like a half a mile of track up there for cooling. Mm-hmm. Once it came out of the oven, it would get sucked out of the pans with suction cups, you know, and air. And the bread would go up on the belt, and the pans would go underneath and back to be reloaded.
Yes.
And, that system, and then it goes right into the bagging machine without being touched at all. Right. So, you know, it was, and tied with just like a sewing machine thread. And that's how it was tied.
By machine.
Yeah. But prior to that, I can back up a little bit, I guess. McGavin Toastmaster acquired one of the first few automatic bagging machines in all of Canada, and it took Shaw's a while to get it, and because we were all using wax paper at that time to wrap bread, and actually we did gain a big market share just because of that plastic bag, because the bag was advertised as having many uses for freezer, for sure. This and that, and
so people could make use of the bag after
exactly,
they had the
brand. And they really liked it, and Shaw's had to really scramble to get a bagging machine into their possession, because there was a lineup or a waiting list for these machines apparently at one time when it first started out. But they kept up. But Shaw's was probably one of the only automated plant in Thunder Bay, which was right from start to finish. And that was back in the 50s they were doing that.
Well, when you move into management, I guess that can allow me to ask you about the various activities that went on in the bakery. We've been talking about the distribution end of it. The bread comes out, and you've now described how the bread is packaged for sale and the kind of packaging that's involved. If we started at the other end, what was the other end of the process? Was it the purchase of flour?
Well, right from the start, yes. Well, we did. They had one of probably the only transport truck that brought flour to the bakery. It was brought in by railroad over by Irwin Ready Mix.
Oh, yes.
There was a track there where they put the flour, and we'd pump it into a tanker truck and bring it to the bakery and pump it into the bakery, which was other small bakers would have to handle all their flour by bags.
And you were bringing it in by in bulk?
Bulk. White and brown mainly were, the wheat breads were bulk, because they were the biggest part of our operation. But the smaller products, they came in by bag. Units were maybe only mixed 100 or 200 loaves or something.
How many different kinds of flours would you be buying then? The white and the brown?
White and the brown, then you can mix different into the brown, into the wheat.
Right.
You know, you can mix a cracked wheat or a different type of.
Right. How many other kinds? Bread. How many other kinds of flours would there be from your?
I think it'd only be white and brown, or
guessing. Right.
And then, they would mill it at the milling process. They would give you the wheat flour.
Were you buying from any particular milling company?
I'm not sure. Well, we'd probably buy from the company that gave us the best quote.
Yes, I suppose it could vary.
Yeah, and a lot of times we were behind the eight ball with these, because the Western Empire, they owned their own mills and they owned their own flour places and all that stuff. So they still had a bit of an advantage on you.
I think it was through the 1920s that the organization of supermarkets began, and the big bakeries. The milling companies, of course, were older than that, but the vertical integration that began, which you're describing, the way in which Weston's achieved control of these in order to get the best.
McGavin's had their own flour mills. Weston's had their own flour mills, because they had to keep up to compete, I believe.
And so you'd be buying from Robin Hood or Ogilvy's or what? Yeah. Those would be two of the independents, I suppose.
Robin Hood, and Ogilvy's,
And then
they're the biggest.
Five Roses, and we could begin trying to remember the various kinds of flour mills that existed. In later years, the baking of bread would become much more varied. All kinds of different breads are being baked now. Did Shaw's remain primarily in white bread and brown bread and various mixes of that, or did others? Rye bread, for example.
Rye bread was a small part of our operation, but white bread was the biggest at one point.
And the wholesome bread loaves.
Probably 60-70% of our bread was white originally. People loved white bread.
Yes.
And around 30%, 30-some percent was whole wheats. By the time we finished, close to when I retired, the wheat breads dominated over the white almost. They were either dead even or even there are more varieties coming out.
The 80%, 60%, 100%, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, just the mix of the brown and the white flour, I guess, actually.
Yeah.
Other ingredients go into the baking of bread as well, I suppose.
There is, because when it's milled, white bread, everything's taken out of the flour, and then it's put in as an additive. After, you know, they put it back in.
Yes.
And that part I'm not too familiar about. No. You'd have to be a chemist, though.
Yeah. Well, the whole bread milling, these days you can buy bread that's made from stone ground flour, for mm-hmm. example. Well, I mean, stone grinding went out.
It's a wheat.
The last third of the 19th century, I think, when mm-hmm. Hungarian roller milling came in. I guess they were milling on the Danube and that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that is another subject on which I have a vague sense, as you probably do as well.
Exactly.
So the you need yeast, obviously, and whatnot. Were you ever involved in the
production part of it?
I should ask you what various functions you had in management at Shaw's Bakery.
Not too much with production, other than if you needed to have a complaint about a product or some sort, you'd have to talk to the baker and, mm-hmm. for improvement. But not too much in the baking hands, mostly with sales, totally sales.
You were managing the sales?
Mm-hmm. I had an area, because there was like three supervisors with the... At one point, I think it was four supervisors.
Oh, yes.
Four different ways. Because when they did take over the McGavin business, their business doubled, pretty close to double. So in 68, it just took right off.
Right. And all the baking was being done at on Algoma Street, mm-hmm. in that building there.
And our plant,
one busy place.
Our plant just couldn't, it would run, like you can run all the bread for Thunder Bay in 8-10 hours.
I see.
You know, because like 3,600 loaves an hour,
mm-hmm.
you can go through that oven, you know,
yeah.
And we can bag 60 loaves a minute. So you can pump out a lot of bread, and we could never fill a 24-hour shift.
No, I see. Yeah. So even though the business grew when you had all of this business, mm-hmm. it was still mm-hmm. quite feasible to operate it through that.
Oh,
the baker leads an interesting life in terms of hours, I suppose. The salesman starts at 5, the baker's... The
baker's there at midnight or before, preparing the bags of to mix. And when they, depending what product they were going to make, they would make probably white bread last. They make all the small runs first, and then... And after that, you'd run white bread all for half a day or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
because I suppose the white bread was the real test in terms of freshness too. So if it's
white and wheat,
baked
white and 60% wheat was our biggest sellers. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They're
baked by 4 or 5.
Commanded
the
most
on the truck.
Space on the bread shelf too. Like, that's all you could tell too.
Yeah,
the white outsold the wheat, and the wheat outsold the rye or the French or whatever.
Yeah,
other breads you made. Yeah.
So the baker's day was done by 6 in the morning or whatever, I suppose, was it?
Well, pretty. Some of them would be finished by
or even
7, 8 in the morning. And then the other crew would take over, the ones that are and wrapping and whatever else they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then loading trailers in the afternoon. And then the sales force would take over the next morning. Because you had to bake ahead, like a... You have to bake through the day today for tomorrow's deliveries.
Okay, right. So I was envisaging baking through the night and then it's going out. But
did. A lot of times the salesmen would be waiting for their bread. They were there in the morning and probably because of a breakdown or something in equipment, the run came late. So they'd be waiting on the mm-hmm. dock. They'd have most of their variety breads on their truck. All they'd be waiting is for their white bread or brown bread.
But there was a second shift then baking through the day,
mm-hmm.
and their product would be going out in the morning. So the morning delivery would be partly really fresh stuff baked mm-hmm. that night, and other which had been baked the previous day.
There was times when we, because of competition, we'd bake a certain amount of bread and let the salesman go in the morning, let them go, and they come back in the afternoon and come pick up hot bread. And deliver really fresh bread to the stores. So nobody, any baker that just baked once, he had a hard time keeping up to us
mm-hmm.
because we had two fresh bakes.
Yeah.
In the city, anyways.
Right.
In the country, it was one bake, it had to go
that
evening, and in the morning it was there for a delivery. Yeah.
And how did the competition gradually develop then? The small bakeries, some of which are still in operation,
mm-hmm.
the the supermarket bakery? We mentioned that earlier, of course, but how did that gradually develop as the various stores? How did life become more difficult for Shaw's over the years?
I don't know what was a... There was different changes, like people were eating less bread. They were getting into muffins, English muffins, different types of product. So that all ate all into the white bread, the brown bread business.
Yes.
Because people's tastes became different, and they wanted to try something new.
Right.
So all that... Plus, little bakers, they produced a product that you could not make.
No.
You know, because they'd make it at 50 loaves at a time or 60, and
right.
they'd bake their 300 loaves of bread and go home. They were happy with that. They would probably accommodate that individual, like Vienna Bakery.
Sure.
He comes in at around midnight, and in the morning he's got bread, and he sells that bread by the afternoon, and mm-hmm. he's finished.
Yeah. You know?
But our products, well, it was just a little different that way.
So in a sense, if I can use the word, you were an industrial bakery, or was that adjective?
Commercial bakery.
Commercial bakery.
Yeah, we were commercial bakers.
Bennett's may well be the best known of these, well, maybe I shouldn't say that, of the small competing bakeries. I
mean, Bennett's grew a bit, quite a bit, because they started to take over some of the businesses that were dropped by us when the plant closed, I believe. Five Star was a beneficiary
mm-hmm.
of a lot of that volume. And they were probably all quite happy to see Shaw's go.
Right, into the 21st century. Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And I gather that you weren't, or were you involved with the attempt to get it restarted?
Oh, I was hired on a basis of helping them out in certain areas. I'm trying to think of the word, escapes me right at the moment. When they hire a person, what do you call that?
Consultant.
A consulting basis. Yeah, you got the word. Couldn't had it on the tip of my tongue. Consulting basis, and we would work helping train salespeople or even go into markets and solicit more stores and businesses to try to get their business up,
yeah.
Things like that. Especially where there was competition, we would have to travel. Like I traveled with G. H. Shaw Graham, which he's still selling bread right now in this market, like under the Shaw label.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see much of it, but out in the country, apparently, like Manitowoc and different places, he's got quite a big order out there.
I see.
He's known out there.
Right. And what is he buying? Where is he baking?
He still buys from a Wholesome plant out of, I believe it's St. Cloud. It's a Wholesome bakery.
Oh, in Manitoba?
No, in...
In Minnesota?
Minnesota, yeah.
So
they meet.
Right.
Trucks halfway, and then he loads his truck and comes back to Thunder Bay. And,
I see.
And then other ways he gets bread is by transport.
Right.
Right into one, but I'm not totally sure of his operation, how it works. But.
So Wholesome is a brand, isn't it? It wouldn't be easy to establish a brand in what, at first blush, is just a standard product. I mean, it's all white bread.
Exactly.
So how do you distinguish your own brand from others? How do you make Wholesome stand out?
Well, it was interesting. It was Shaw's Wholesome Bread years ago with a WHOLSUM.
Okay.
SOME, I believe, Wholesome Bread.
Right.
And when we joined the co-op, this was a cooperative through the States and Hawaii and a few other places, the bakers
sure.
belonged to that.
Sort of a continental business by the sound of it.
Yes. It was their offices were based in Chicago. And they... 50 bakers banded together to be able to compete with the big chain bakers.
Mm-hmm.
And
the supermarket chain.
The supermarket chain, yeah. And we were able to, and Weston's,
mm-hmm.
and McGavin's,
well,
and all those guys,
sure.
Dempster's, you name it. Dempster's wasn't known through here too much,
because
they were mostly down east. And in order to have the same buying power as them, we got together.
So it was first of all a purchasing co-op then, was it, in terms of buying flour?
That's what it was, yeah.
It?
We had the big kickoff at Lakehead University when the introduction was made.
Oh, yeah.
To all the people that worked at the bakery, their families, and everything.
Remember offhand when that was? Or?
No, not totally. I think it was in the early 70s, around 72, yeah. 73. When they
find it in the newspaper.
And they got this big red bag, which nobody had, and they had the rights to that red bag all across North America.
Right. And this was H-O-L.
H-O-L-S-U-M.
S-U-M, no.
And Shaw's was W-H-O-L-E-S-O-S-S-O-M-E.
Sure. Wholesomely, the dictionary word for it was wholesome bread.
Did you think
it was a? Did it, well, it represent a gain for you to be in the co-op?
It was an exciting time when we went into that, and because of the buying power, it was able to keep us in business a lot longer. Right. Because the kind of operation we had, there was only like four or five independents left in all of Canada that could bake bread. On the type of system we had a sponge and dough method system, mm-hmm. and there wasn't many bakers left that did that because it was a little more expensive to make it that way.
I see.
And the big bakers now, they use a kind of a continuous mix. Mm-hmm. It just pours out like porridge into the pans, you know,
yeah.
and then rises, and it's a different system. But
not as good, I'm sure.
It wasn't. No, you could really notice the difference in the bread.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, how do you say, the sponge and dough method was almost like they followed the same ideas that you did baked bread in your own home.
Mm-hmm.
You'd put yeast in it, punch it down, let it rise, and we did the same thing but with machinery.
Right. The machinery that you used at Shaw's Bakery, was it acquired before you got there, before 1968?
Oh, yeah, it was ancient.
Yeah, so that's why
they're quite old.
It looked ancient by the time I saw it in the last
there's
10
times
years.
You could never get parts for them. We had a machine shop, and we had people working in our machine shop. They could manufacture or make a part in their machine shop to
keep
it going. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, where are we? Are there aspects of the business that we haven't talked about? I'm sure there are.
No doubt.
So you work basically in sales, either as a salesman or
pretty well
supervisor.
Sales, yeah.
Throughout.
Supervisor, yeah.
And someone else could tell us about the various other branches of the business.
Oh, yeah. Sandy could probably tell you all the
stuff
and the office and how it functioned. And
yes.
How it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What would you like people to know about the work that you did?
What they liked? Well, I'm not sure if I want anybody to know what they totally, but no, I enjoyed my job. Like it provided for my family, and I don't know, I enjoyed it after a while. Like they said, can you sell bread? I said, I've never sold anything in my life. So after once you got into it, it was kind of a... Like every morning, it's one big family you'd meet, eh?
Yes.
At 7 in the morning, 7:30, 8 o'clock, hi Mary, hi Joe, like you got to know.
Yes.
Everybody, like it's part of a big group.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I suppose that at the door, the bread would sell itself in a way when you were doing the retail.
You got to
retail.
Know what the customer wanted every Monday or every Tuesday.
Yes.
Just leave me one loaf and a piece of pastry or something. You leave it in between the door, mark it in your book, they pay you once a week or
okay. And you were collecting as well, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to collect yourself, yeah.
Yep.
That was a different operation. And I wasn't there when the horse and buggy, but I remember chasing them, the horse and buggy down the street when we lived in Westport. They delivered bread.
When would it have mechanized? After the war?
I don't know exactly when Shaw started to go.
You would have been 10 in
automated.
48. Were you 10 when you were chasing a horse and wagon?
Oh, probably 10 years old.
Yeah,
so it's probably 60.
Could have been into the 50s then.
A little over 60 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I probably helped a five-star guy for a while because he was on our street. And their bread was never wrapped. Like it was like wooden slats in the back of them. You open the doors and you got a hook. And spiked the bread, pulled it, put it in a bag, and gave it to you at the house. You know, like it was a crusty type bread,
yeah.
And that's how they delivered it.
Hygienic?
Well, I would think so. That's possible, yeah.
Enclosed box, I hope.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What might interest or surprise people about the work that you did?
What might surprise people? I'm just... Well, they're surprised that you get a sore back from lifting such a light product. But you figure over the years how many loaves of bread you lifted or trays. There was like 10 loaves of bread to a tray, and people thought, well, can't be that hard of a job, eh? But some guys, they were pretty tough. They would try to lift five, six trays of bread. I remember a little Italian fellow, his name was Casper Pagnotta, when he... did the Dominion stores, he would take bread like that, and it was just that high. So you know he's got 60, 70 loaves of bread, and he's kind of get it to the dock and drop it like that. But I mean, you pay for that in the end.
Yeah.
With your in older years, you're going to have back trouble.
Back trouble was one of the occupational...
Yeah, it was, yeah. Risk. The lifting, you had to really... Well, we had to train people, don't lift bread like this. Yeah. Don't lift
with how legs lift. Rather than the back.
And yeah, sort of. All that. You have to tell people because you're tough when you're young. You're not going to hurt yourself. Either. But
tough but stupid. You
know, yeah. And tough and stupid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, that would, I'm sure, the fact that the stuff, it's not a Portland cement bag at 87.5 pounds, but...
Well, those guys inside lifting bags, they lifted heavy
stuff.
Yeah,
like, of course they did.
Like they were 80-pound bags or 100-pound bags.
Flour.
I think, yeah, flour, yeah. Especially the variety-type breads. But,
yes.
But, yeah. Well, you know, some of the hours that we worked, you often wondered how you did it all those years. Like early in the morning, late at night, like sometime you get home. And if you have a breakdown or trouble with a truck or anything, you still have to finish your route. Wait, try to get a truck to you and reload the old truck into the new truck and keep on going. And, yeah, there were some long hours. You know?
So the conditions of employment, in a sense, were tough ones.
They weren't easy. Yeah,
it wasn't an eight-hour day.
No, it wasn't just an eight-hour day, no.
No.
And you accepted it. You worked like that, and you didn't know any different. You know, I say your job wasn't done until the paperwork was done, more or less, they say. And you cash in and do your paperwork after the fact. And yeah, it wasn't an easy job, but it was enjoyable work. Mm-hmm. You know, like saying meeting the public and things like that.
Was the employment fairly steady, or to what extent was there turnover in the
workforce? No, there was no turnover in the bakery. No. The only turnover there was in the bakery is when the salesman that they hired went back to the elevators or things like that because they were better paying jobs. So there were a lot of times they were out in the street looking for a warm body to put into a truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the early
they couldn't years. Compete with the grain handlers.
No, the wage wise and that.
No.
And well, they had wages, they had benefits and everything. They were unionized shops, but still, the wages were a lot better. There was probably overtime, different things like that. So they made pretty good money in the elevators or in Northern Woods or places like that. Because along the shoreline, there was all kinds of elevators at one point, you know, in the early years.
Were there?
Oh, there was tons. You know, Sandy Shaw will tell you about that.
Okay.
How he stands on Hillcrest Park there and looks.
Oh, you mean along the waterfront here? Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Tons,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there were. 30 plus or whatever the number was.
Those were good times for people. There was there was a lot of money around, and people spent it. People were all working. Or, you know, there was a low, probably unemployment rate.
Right.
Yeah.
But so it suggests to some extent that people who were in the bread business, of course, working in the elevators was not easy work either, especially in the winter time. So I suppose that's where a person would choose which way to go, whether. Mm-hmm.
As soon as they got laid off in the elevator, they were looking for work.
Yeah.
They'd get a job temporarily with the bakery or inside in production or something.
Yeah.
And then when the elevator's looking for them, they were back because of the money was good.
So there would be that kind of into and out of the...
Yeah, so it was always training new people, new faces all the time.
And as a supervisor, you were involved with
the training part, yeah. You'd have The thing that would really annoy me is when you train a guy for 3 weeks and you let him, usually after a 3 week program, he's on his own pretty well. He can go by him, he can swim.
Yeah.
And then when the 3 week program is finished and the guy says, well, you know, I don't think this job's for me. It's his own.
What a strangle, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, because we train out of town, you'd be out of town for a month, you know, pretty well, like Fort Francis, that happened to me there.
Sure.
Hired a policeman at one point. And nice guy, good guy, hardworking, but he decided I'm not going to peddle bread all my life. Didn't want to do that once he saw the ins and outs of everything.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, there were...
So then you were looking for someone else to do that.
And then in the meantime, I'd have to do the job till I hired someone else. Or if we had a swing person, sometimes there's a swing man available to us that could go and do the route, and then we'd train someone else.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes the training was done right on the routes.
Mm-hmm.
The guy'd come from out of town, work with our people in town.
Yes.
And then we got... Yes. That's how we... It was interesting work.
It sounds that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenging.
Indeed. What are you most proud of looking back on these years of selling bread or supervising the selling of bread?
Most proud of? Oh, tough questions, eh? I believe that I lasted out that long in that type of business. But once you got into it, you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the contact with people. And it just becomes part of you.
To what extent was Shaw's Bakery a family? You were mentioning greeting people when you come to work in the morning and so on and so forth.
Oh, as a family? Well, I
think a family.
All the people that worked at Shaw's, I might add that all our kids went through the Shaw, University of Shaw, you might call it. You know, they had their first jobs selling, working in a thrift store or... Until they went to university, it was like summer jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They'd work inside the plant.
Sure.
So they were that good to the families. They would hire all your kids.
Right.
Things to that, yeah.
Yes.
Enjoyed that part. And the kids were at 16 years old. They were having an income so they could spend their money and not mooch off the man. The mom, yeah.
Yeah,
well, all our kids went through it.
Sure.
Probably anybody that had children, they went through Shaw's.
Right.
In some way, shape, or form, yeah.
To what extent was there a social side to the business? A Christmas party?
Oh, yeah, there was. Every year they had a,
picnics
they had
in the
a Christmas party. We had picnics, like you say, and we also had promotions, like in the summertime, if you have a sales event, like hot dogs and hamburgers would be the best,
mm-hmm.
or the highest salesman.
Mm-hmm.
For selling a product, then you'd have a great big barbecue and things like that.
To celebrate the achievement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And summertime was always our biggest bun, as you can tell.
Sure.
Like July and August, where the bun sales would just boom like that. And then by the middle of August, towards the end of August, they're gone. You're tired of eating all that charcoal and, and hot dogs.
Yeah, supporting barbecuing,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, we had our Christmas parties and things like that.
Yeah. Was the business a 5 days a week, or was it 6 or 7 days of the week? The bakers, for example, they weren't baking every day, or were they?
6 days a week. I think there was one. There was a one down day for the bakers. Which
right.
I think it was in the middle of the week. It was a Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Wednesday.
I see.
Yeah, we would. They would bake a big order for Monday, and another big order for Tuesday to cover Wednesday, so there's two day bake there,
right.
And then the inside people would have that day off.
So this meant that, of course, they were baking, I guess, Sunday night for the Monday morning.
Exactly, yeah, Sunday afternoon.
Or Sunday afternoon, right.
Yeah, to get
right.
To get all the loads out ready for the country and all that stuff, yeah. It was.
I suppose that's pretty standard in bakeries, probably.
Yeah,
that kind
there were some... The family tried to introduce different ways that to cover the market every day of the week,
yes.
At times, because when the competition was there, it was really strong. You had to be one step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So they adopted something like they did at the mills or something. You'd work
different shifts.
4 days, 2 days off, 5 days, 1 day off. Yeah, but it kept on running every day of the week.
Yes.
Yeah, with the trucks out there. But but the baking process pretty well stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we had to juggle.
Right.
Juggle the production mm-hmm. around the sales part.
Yes. So. When you became a supervisor, did this take you out of the union, or were you still...
No, we're out of the union.
You were out of the union.
Yeah, we managed it, yeah. Yeah.
How many times were your actions grieved, or did that not happen very often?
My actions? Well, there's always a complaint, but usually you try to solve them before they got to a certain point, before they festered, really.
Yeah.
And that was the trick,
right?
Really, to...
You mentioned Sandy's wanting to heft a placard. How many times did Shaw's workers strike?
Well, shortly after I think I was still at McGavin's. It was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were picketing the Shaw Bakery out in front,
right.
Walking up and down the street.
Do you remember what the...
what year it was?
Or what the prime cause of the breakdown was at the time?
It always ended up being money or benefits or things like that, or improvements of that nature. You know, to
I understand as a principle of union negotiation that
mm-hmm.
one should never strike for money, because workers are always going to lose because of the strike. There should
mm-hmm.
be
exactly.
principles involved. But,
well, there's benefits and things that you've got to try and get.
Of course, the benefits are very often... Well, they're not as obviously financial, I guess.
Yeah, benefits are financial, and they, dental plans and things like that, got to be a pretty big dollar for the companies.
Sure.
Pretty big money. So, so just like the School of Medicine there.
Yes.
It just settled now, because there was some...
Yes, I guess, I saw them still on the...
At the
gate, if you will, this afternoon when I went by.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be over by the weekend.
They had a little help from Sudbury. Was it Sudbury?
Well, that's the other part of the medical school. So the workers there. Yeah, some of them came in from Sudbury.
As a support system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking over these questions. Some of these really don't. Your work didn't contribute to Canada's success as an international grain trader, except in your keeping grain handlers well fed, I suppose, and so on and so forth. What major changes did you see over the years of your employment at Shaw's?
Changes?
Would you be able to focus? I guess technologically, there wasn't much change. Shaw's good equipment when it started and ran it.
Exactly.
Till it was over.
You say kind of pioneers in that area, and when I joined that company, they were automated and.
Yes.
So didn't see too many changes other than the automatic bagging machines
mm-hmm.
that bag the product and not being touched by
anybody's
hands. Because when I worked at McGavin's, you had these felt cloths on your hands, and when the bread came out of the oven, you grabbed the hot pans and banged them onto the belt, and they went down, and somebody at the end of the belt would grab the bread and put it on cooling racks. So that was the manual thing, because that's how McGavin's operated. They never had an automated plant, but Shaw's did.
I see.
Olson did, so. And some of the big changes, other than that...
The changes in the marketplace, I see.
The market was... the way it was changing, like the big chain baker, he kind of took over everything. And if you weren't in with them on everything and offered them what they needed, you were shut out pretty quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah, you had to be on top of it. We had to travel lots to go to head offices, things like that, to try to maintain your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember,
supermarket head offices where you were
selling
the product,
exactly,
convincing them they should buy from you.
Yes.
You take A&P on River Street, the store that, and Safeway would be the two that I would personally have known, but I well remember
prior
being
to that
in
was
the
Shop Easy.
Oh yes,
I remember Shop Easy. They were all over the place.
Yeah.
Shop Easy stores.
Okay, before my time, I guess. But
there were red and white. I guess red and white plaques out in front of their stores.
Right.
Red and white stores. Remember
the wholesome bread on the shelves at A&P as an example, and I guess you were supplying A&P, but Safeway did its own baking, or have I not got that right?
We supplied Safeways
to some extent.
Yeah, but they controlled you on the shelf. They because they had a bakery, Empress Foods in Winnipeg, which they had to keep their plant running and full.
Mm-hmm.
So there was all kinds of pressures, right, to keep their bakery going.
Yeah,
and us trying to keep our bakery going.
So let's take the competition between yourselves and Safeway, for example. Now, providing bread to A&P in terms of freshness, you'd have them beat Old Hollow. Or what would Safeway be doing? They'd be, how quickly could they get bread onto the shelf?
They use their in-store as that kind of a thing, saying we're
sort of
fresh, we bake it right.
That's the front of it. Eh?
Yes, and you get the idea that their bread is fresh. They got an oven right there.
Yes.
And it came from Winnipeg, like overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So
there'd be a truck coming, or trucks coming in every day.
Day or every second day. Same with
baked one day and then overnight.
Another one that was a superstore. Like they hauled their bread out of Winnipeg.
Right. Oh, yeah, the superstore here in the inner city area.
Yeah, and right. The wholesale club,
that's
all one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they traveled overnight, or they bake product in different plants across Canada. So
sure.
In Winnipeg, they'd have a bun plant that just baked nothing but buns for most of Canada, for hamburgers and hot dogs, for McDonald's, for Burger King, all those. We had all seven McDonald's stores at one time.
Yeah. And, well, we could get into Tim Hortons bakery these days, but that's an issue neither of us knows enough about to have a good discussion about.
I was in, there's one baker that we bought product from that made pies and things. He lived just outside of Hamilton. He bakes for Tim Hortons, like a bit the bagels and different things like that.
Yeah.
And their warehouse is, oh gosh, it's got to be 3 stories high inside, where they got the machine that it's kind of a drive-in freezer where they would bake and just fill that right up to cover all the Tim Hortons in Ontario.
Right. Pretty well. So this was, they were doing sort of pre-baking or whatever, and then freeze it and send it out, and then it was finished off in the Tim Hortons stores, I gather?
Yes. Yeah. Well, sometimes Tim Hortons stores, like that egg sandwich that they make, that was always brought in frozen. You know, and it's just like you think it was baked there, eggs. So they have a plant somewhere that does nothing but those egg sandwiches or whatever that they have.
Yeah.
You know, so every company has a different way to make their business profitable.
You know? Freshness is a very important part of it. To what extent is the freshness more in the advertising than in the reality?
Advertising is a must. You need advertising to keep it in the public eye all the time, pretty well.
Yeah.
You have to have that. But freshness is very important. You can advertise all you want, and if you don't look after your product out in that market, you're going to burn a customer once, maybe twice. Next time they're not going to buy it. No matter what how much money you spend on advertising. So it would be foolish not to back up your advertising with good bakeries.
Do your darndest to get it there,
to
keep it fresh.
Oh yeah, you'd have to.
City Bread Company in Winnipeg produces specialty breads for Safeway. I don't know whether.
Yeah, we bought bread off them too, City Bread. We had a City Bread route in the city of Thunder Bay, which the salesman, all he sold was rye breads in the morning and then Vachon cakes in the afternoon, things like that. So that bakery in Winnipeg, that was a good rye bread.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was Cub. We brought Cub Bakery too from Winnipeg, which was quite large in Winnipeg, big bakers.
So these are ways you had of supplementing, because your basic product here was primarily the white and the brown.
And it was easier to ship in 100 loaves or 300 loaves rather than trying to. You couldn't mix it in the mixer upstairs, because the mixer upstairs would mix 700 loaves at once.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so you couldn't use 700 loaves of rye bread.
No.
Unless you spread it over 3 days and then.
And then it's not fresh.
That's right. And goodness is not there.
No.
No. So.
Right.
Yeah.
How much would you produce for McDonald's? Were they a big account for you at that time?
They were huge, actually, because we had McDonald's, 3 or 4 McDonald's in the city of Thunder Bay. We had one in Dryden, one in Kenora, and one in Fort Francis. They went on our trailer system out that way. But they were huge, but they weren't profitable, because they ran their own bakeries in different parts of the country, and they know what it costs to run a high-speed plant efficiently. And if we weren't as efficient as them, it actually almost cost you. Because they would grind you right to the bone for price. Because they said, oh, well, we can run 300 buns a minute or something, and if your plant wasn't that efficient, it was tough to get a contract with them. And if you did bow to their pricing, well, what it did at times was fill in the hours in the plant. Say you had some down times where, say, one day you only had 7 hours of production and you need 10. It was a good filler.
Yes.
Something like that. Because you got to pay the staff.
Yes.
You know, because they're guaranteed their 40 hours a week.
Sure.
Things like that. So in a sense, it was good. And in another sense, it wasn't a very profitable thing for us. Even though you went through the hoops making a lot of buns, but not a lot of money.
A&W as well, did you supply
that? Yeah, we did A&Ws too, yeah. Burger King.
Yeah.
Burger King, McDonald's, A&Ws. We had probably the type of bun that they wanted nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Like they used to say, gotta be 32 sesame seeds on a bun or something like some of their specs. And if it wasn't there, or the cedar wasn't working right, you'd hear about it.
You would too, yeah. Even though they'd all been eaten up, I suppose.
Yeah.
And these, did the changes, the competition eventually drive Shaw's out of the business? I mean, this is ultimately a question I suppose to ask Sandy if I have the courage.
You'd probably be able to answer that better, but because he was on the accounting end of it with the accountant. But I think, like I said, there was changes going through the whole industry, like eating habits of people.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart's coming in. We supplied quite a bit of Walmart stuff. But nowadays it's Dempster's or somebody's supplying them. But everything does take a little bite out of your business. And no matter, mm-hmm. English muffins is one, we don't produce them. Mm-hmm. So you have to buy them. Different types. Bagels, you don't make them.
No.
You got to buy them. And because you couldn't run them efficiently and make money at them. So slowly, I guess, it would shrink. And then the big baker. Weston's tried for years and years, as far as 40 years, to try to get into this market and always abandoned it and left town because we were that strong in the marketplace. Okay. And it was all those things, I guess. It's a number of things that affected.
I think it's a good part of it would be changes at the table or wherever you want to put it, people choosing to eat diverse way, I suppose.
Well, now you're looking at the chain stores, you can almost go get your own meal there, you know.
Yes.
Anything you buy, you can jump out of the car and have supper on the table.
Sure.
Things like that.
The deli sections of the stores.
Both people in the family are working now, and there's not a lot of time.
Yes.
For them to do all the things they want to do as a family.
Because the door-to-door retail business, you were mentioning that earlier, that as the
I think men were
the wife of the house was also out from away from the house.
At times, yeah. But I think mainly then, years ago, a lot of women did stay at home.
You know, and that's when the retail business. Of course, they could have been breaking their own bread, but they were buying.
They did too. Yeah, they did both. Yeah. Yes. Like even in a country where they could have baked bread, you'd take a basket full of bread, like 8-10 loaves of bread, donuts, sweet buns, walk up to the house, they'd empty your basket, take everything. Because they'd see you next Monday, eh? So they would try to buy for a week, you know, just like groceries. They'd come into town and buy for the month, canned goods and different things like that.
Yeah,
a lot of things affected.
And was there a point when the rural business was given up, when you stopped? I guess that'd be population changes as well.
Cost to run vehicles. Yeah. Gas was a big deal.
Starting even
one time, I think we used to pay about 35 cents a gallon in the '60s.
Yes,
you know, or even diesel fuel 29 or 28 cents.
Right,
and now at $1.09 a liter, which is close to $5-6 a gallon.
Yeah.
You have to charge a good buck
to justify it.
The product's got to bear the expense, and if you get a if you get resistance from the consumer, there's nothing you can do unless if you're so efficient that you can absorb that cost somehow or produce the product better, faster, quicker, whatever. You could probably stay alive, but if you didn't keep up with all the changes, you'd slowly lose ground.
Yeah. And people were moving into town, or the population of the rural areas fell off as well. I would have to go further to get to a door, would that not be the case? I guess Cam's population is pretty
steady. Small or constant, stay the same. But we used to ship out of Pickle Lake. We used to drive a bread truck up there in boxes to ship to Paganjicum, Trouble Lake,
northern communities,
all those northern communities. And we could ship a case of bread for, what was it, like 48 cent stamp on the box. Mm-hmm. It was like a postal point.
Oh,
so you could ship a box of bread for that much.
Canada Post would take it in.
They would take it in, yeah. But they had to watch how they took it in because bread was very bulky.
Yes.
They would have to top load it or else they weren't profitable.
No.
They couldn't take a load of bread because they'd go broke.
No.
Doing it, they'd have to have everything else with it.
Yes.
Canned goods and who knows what else.
And were northern stores in some of these communities?
Yeah, Pickle Lake had northern stores.
Right.
And Trout Lake has, I don't know if they still have a northern, they may have. Yeah. It's called Northern. And before, most of these places had northern stores in the outlying markets.
And were northern stores buying from you then?
Yes, they were. They were buying from us and from Winnipeg also. Right. Depending where they could fly out of.
Yeah, so I was going to say they'd be flying the bread here.
Yeah, they'd fly it in. Yeah, so we did it. We did it through Pickle Lake Post Office, and we also did it through Red Lake at Bombertown. There was an airport there, in Bombertown. So we delivered the bread there.
Does Canada Post still do that? Do they still?
I'm sure they still postage bread into the communities. Yeah. Because it's subsidized by the government somehow, shape, or form.
Yeah. Well, you want to say if liquor can be sold across the province at the same standard price, why not bread and milk?
Exactly, I think, yeah.
Canada Post could play some part in ensuring that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy, the nooks and crannies we can get into.
It's unbelievable what went on. You know. I wonder how you did it.
Well, these changes clearly impacted the industry, and they impacted... did the workforce at Shaw's decline over the years, or was it pretty steady given the equipment remained more or less the same?
Each community, we still kept a salesperson there, but we just tried to bolster their sales with other products to keep them there.
Mm-hmm.
So the outlying communities, the salesmen stayed there. Sure. At times there, if we had to amalgamate, we'd get one guy to do two towns.
Mm-hmm.
One town in the morning here, and then the afternoon he'd do the other town. That's the only way you could get around some of that stuff. But in the city, I guess, I'm trying to think, we had 10, 12 city routes. We had route 1, route 2, route 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We had two cake routes, 31, 32. Yeah, we had about 12 routes in the city, and 15, 16 outlying community ones. So, like I said, 50% of our business was out of town. Yeah,
and one person per route then, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and the only backup you have is employ a swing person to help you out for holidays and different things. Or if you didn't have the swing person, you as a supervisor would do the job for 2 weeks.
How large a challenge was weather over the years? Were there seasonal patterns that weather would affect you, or?
Yeah, especially
winter
was bad for transportation.
Yeah.
Like sometimes the transport wouldn't get there till, should be there early in the morning, wouldn't get there till late in the afternoon. And that would affect the guys selling their loads and stuff. And
sure.
They'd have to, the next order's coming right on the heels of the other one that just got there.
Yeah.
So you think, well, they're going to buy the same amount of bread, but somehow they do without and do eat something else, I believe. When they were short of bread. And so that would result in a salesman phoning in a cut, saying, I don't need 1,000 loaves tomorrow, I need only 500.
Yes.
Things like that. So, weather did affect transportation and sales that way.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned, of course, the other seasonal pattern in terms of surges in buns in the summertime and so on. But that's a market.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. That's against the
that's a good surge,
The weather, primarily in terms of winter. Mm-hmm. What other challenges would you say you faced on the job besides dealing with the changes that occurred over the years?
Well, I think it's a people thing. A lot of it is people.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody wanted to be the breadman the rest of their lives. And like I said, it involved lots of training. And
yes.
That was a constant challenge, just to keep people interested and keeping them wanting to do that job.
Right.
And especially if you got a good person that was really conscientious in his stuff, you'd really try to keep him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he does a great job, which he did.
Right.
And but once they wanted to move on, they moved on, and there's not much you can do. Or if people moved away.
Right.
I guess training was probably one of the biggest things.
Biggest challenge,
yeah, because you're
constantly
keeping your workforce in there, yeah.
But you stayed with it all those years.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were enjoyed doing it?
To my surprise, yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah. Like I said, I don't think I could sell bread. Oh, go ahead, go try it. They give you a slip and say go.
Sure.
See Mr. Walton. Mr. Walton was the manager at McGavin's, and when I remember him, I still remember him. He's showing me around the bakery, the kind of indoctrination of the ovens and what's going on, the mixers. And I'm walking around, I guess, 21 years old or 22, with my hands in my pocket looking around. He says, you know, mister, he says, when you get in the bakery business, you're not going to have your hands in your pocket. And he starts stomping around the bakery like he's full of energy, eh? Like he's saying, hey, you got to move it. Eh? And I did it. We moved it, and I wasn't sorry for it, you know? Especially out of school, you know. I had a job and I was happy with it. So,
right.
Yeah, railroad was the first job, but
sure. Were you tempted to do something else along the way, or?
Oh, at times I did. Probably I'm trying to think of what it was I applied for. Oh, other companies like other forms of selling,
mm-hmm.
like a chip salesman or. Something like that. I did try. When I got dissatisfied or something, or whatever irks you at times, you just want to say, I had enough of this, but you get over it.
Quite clearly, yes. What, at the end of it all, are the most vivid memories you have of the work that you did, of your job?
Vivid memories. I don't know if I can answer that one. In what way?
Any way at all. beating some really bad weather once, or no storm.
Well, there was times that were they're not enjoyable. I guess when a salesman phones in from Ignace and says I fell off the back of the truck and I hurt my back. And it's about 10 to 12 here, midnight. He's loading his vehicle. Jump in the van and go. And you go there, and by the time you get there, it's time to go to work.
Yeah, 5 or 6 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
A little earlier.
Then you got to drive. One of his jobs was driving the mail bread to Pickle Lake, this particular person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, times like that, you know, they were tough. Yeah, hard to keep awake on the road. Things like that. You had to pull over. You'd get driving and pull over and get a 10-minute shut eye, and truck goes by, wakes you up, and away you go again. And you know you're on a schedule. You got to get there. Things like that.
Never had an accident?
No, fortunately, no. Hit the shoulder a few times, which wakes you up. Yeah. Like we used to drive at times when we didn't use the transport system to go to Geraldton. We had a 5-ton truck that would take a load up to Geraldton and Longlac, and you drive that truck you leave here at 4:30 in the morning, drive it there to be there by 7:30 because the salesman's he's waiting for you. So you drive the load there, and then you work the highway all the way back, picking up Jellicoe, Beardmore, things like that, and going into resorts, things like that, going into McDermott, different things like that. Pass Lake store and all the way back home, and which was quite a long day.
It would be
12, 14-hour days. Yeah, yeah, they kind of stand out.
the people part of it, I suppose, you got to know an awful lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
All over northwestern Ontario.
Pretty well. There's times when you saw people in town here, and you know them. And you say,
just need a reminder of where exactly.
Where you knew them from, man.
Eh? Yeah.
And you say, Sulikout. And say, oh, okay, I know now, yeah. But you have to jog your memory.
Eh? Sure.
Like, yeah, you know a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah, driving those loads out of town, they were hectic.
You know? Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. It really wasn't an easy job, eh?
No.
When you come to think of it. But like you say, you accept it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you just do it. I guess, you know,
it's the way your life goes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about the most important events that happened in the workplace during your career? Mm-hmm.
Well, important for me, I guess I went to management, which I thought was given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were always looking for a supervisor or something. And,
yeah.
And when you get approached, you feel pretty good about it.
It's a compliment always.
Yeah, yeah. So
abilities have been recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they know that you're hardworking and trying and want to do the job. Yeah.
Was it a pretty happy place to be working?
Pretty well.
It was a family business.
It was a family business, yeah.
Yes.
But sometimes a national company is a lot easier to work for. You know,
the boss is far away.
Way away, yeah. And on top of that, you know what your job is. You got to meet the numbers and things like that. And if you're not meeting them, you do something to get them up, and you do all that, and I think they accept you that way, eh? But here, you're really right in their face, eh? Especially family business. You know?
Or they're in your face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, that's for sure.
No. Just different.
It's different.
Definitely,
yeah.
Different.
It's a different way, yeah.
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 Well, I don't know whether to ask you whether you think it's important for us to preserve and share Thunder Bay's grain trade history or not.
Not much we can do about it now, can we?
Sad to say, it isn't all history yet, thank goodness, but there are times.
Yeah.
But we have, of course, taken a long step into, or beyond the industry in a way, in terms of talking about moving bread, but it seemed to me a good idea to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any thoughts you'd have about... Well, maybe, are there any questions that we should have asked, which you could provide and then answer?
Yeah. I don't know. You got a sheet load of them there.
Well, I do have a sheet here, yes.
And you do bring memories back when you start talking about it.
Sure.
Things do come back to you and that you never thought about after you left work.
Yeah. You know? Come to an understanding that Owen often has a question that arises in his mind as he's listening and watching the recorder.
I think, Ernie, and you've covered it very well. But I lived in Westport when I was brought up in the 50s, and they still had the horse-drawn wagons, and I think Purity Bread was there. It had Harvest Bread, too.
That was, five-star. I think that was five-star. Or Harvest Bread might have been McGavin's.
Okay, it was right off of May Street.
Yeah, 402 North May Street, same place we were in. That was Arnold's. Okay. They started there, and I think maybe McGavin's had bought that from them.
And our corner store was Nelson's there on Syndicate and Walsh, I guess. So.
Nelson's, but, Walsh and Brock?
Yeah, in that area. Syndicate, Franklin.
Franklin, there you go, yeah.
And they were an old family store.
Yeah, Thornburgs.
Wahlberg's, I guess.
Wahlberg's was there, yeah.
Yeah, all that area. But a lot of them...
You think of it, there's a lot of independents.
A lot of independents. I can recall, as I said, we had milk and bread delivered, and horses, horse-drawn carriages in the 50s, at least well into the 50s, I think, which led to the question I was going to ask. Now, I assume that Shell's had its own fleet of vehicles, and were they kept and maintained right on the property at that?
The horses and the, yes.
Yeah, the horses, they'd be stables
there. Was
there
a barn right there, stables.
Okay.
Right there. Same with Co-op Dairy, that's where Tim Hortons is now there. And the Royal Bank, the new Royal Bank they built there. Miles and right there, that was a co-op dairy, I believe, or Thunder Bay Co-op or something was it called. And their stables were right there, too.
Yeah, and then they must have moved into mechanized delivery in the 60s, I would think.
Yeah, into vehicles,
so
trucks.
Would they maintain their own fleet as well?
We did. I know we did with our We had a mechanic on staff, and they maintained the trucks and things like that.
At the height of its of the business, how many staff would they have had, including your route salesman and your other districts?
I think we had probably 50, 60 full-time employees.
And so it was a big business.
Probably 35, 40 part-timers. Okay. Yeah, so we're probably pushing the 100 mark. So probably for sure. I think Sandy can tell you way better exactly, because he was involved with all the checks and stuff. But I think it was in that neighborhood, close to 100 people that Shaw's employed.
Well, I remember as a kid driving by the big bread plants, you always get the smell of baking bread.
Yeah.
Did you ever get tired of that?
No, I don't know. It just tickles, tickles your buds, that fresh bread.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. Thank you.
And one other thing, I guess the guys that did the horse and buggy deliveries, the horse knew the route as good as the man did, apparently. And when that last call came, the horse was heading for the barn, and you better be on that wagon, because he's gone, he's hungry, he wants his oats, or he wants to eat, or have a drink.
Good clip.
like an old fella that I worked with, Sandy Gibson, he just lived over here on Melvin Avenue. He said if you didn't get on that wagon, that horse was gone. Because they used to drop, I think, at each stop, they used to drop something from the horse's mouth, like a stone or something, on the ground. So he wouldn't move until you lifted that.
I see.
But there was times where when he was doing house calls, he'd fill his basket full of bread and the horse would go along with him. He didn't have to get back to the wagon until he sold out his basket of bread.
The horse just followed him along the street.
Yeah. But when the last call came, the horse knew it was the last call. He's heading for the barn. And you better get on that wagon.
Yeah, they're not stupid.
No, they were definitely not. Not a dumb animal, that's for sure.
Well, if I get into reminiscing myself a little bit, I grew up in the country in Manitoba, and of course my mother baked bread on the farm. I remember... these days it seems kind of crazy, or maybe I shouldn't say that in your presence, to think of the extent to which the bread that had been purchased at the store was a treat when you were eating at the neighbor's, as against the homemade baked bread tended to be fairly crusty. I think that was the main thing about it, I guess.
But you could eat a whole loaf of that thing, you want to come out of the oven almost
yourself.
Yeah.
Well, the crustiness, I suppose it may be the difference between... The oven, whatever sort, is on the farm or in your home, as against the industrial process, the bread is
baked. Yeah, they can crust the bread by, I think how they did it in the big major ovens is that they'd spray it, steam it, give it a shot of steam, and it would crust.
Mm-hmm.
And the sugar give it the brown color.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... sometimes you used to burn bread in your toaster, it's got pretty good sugar in it.
I see. So that's another of the inducements, is it?
Yeah.
If you go into the history of wholesale trade 125 years ago, of course, sugar was a very important part of wholesale trade.
Oh, yeah.
It gets used in so many ways. Yeah. As we are being told these days, salt is being used as well. To an excessive extent, we're being told.
Yeah, we're trying to stay away from salt as much as we can, other than the natural salt that's in the food you eat.
But, right. Well, I never put salt on anything.
I used to salt it till my arm was sore.
People tended to it.
Because you like the taste of salt, and that's the only reason you did it.
Yes.
Kind of make the little lady a little mad, about her cooking. Yeah.
Well, let me see. I don't suppose we need to worry about memorabilia. You don't have anything from the grain trade, or did you carry anything away from Shaw's Bakery when you left?
Oh, I got a shirt.
Oh, yeah.
You want to see it?
Sure, we'll take a look at it when we're finished. Are there any other persons we should interview? Well, we can talk about that, actually. Thanks very much, Joe, for giving us a very interesting interview. Darn, it's going on 2 hours, actually.
You said it would be even close to 2 hours. Yeah,
you've earned your keep right on.
I hope I was able to provide an interesting conversation.
You've really filled in a lot. Certainly sketched some very interesting word pictures and so on. Thanks again, Merrill.